One last time. This is the finale of a special 6-part season of BioPodcast. We spent the last 8 months of 2025 following 4 biographers through the ups and downs of writing biography, the research, the rejection, and the breakthroughs, and everything in between. If you've been here since episode 1, thank you. If you're just finding us, the whole season is in the feed. Start at the beginning. It's a good story. Okay, let's finish this. When I started this project, I thought I was making a podcast about biography, about 4 people writing 4 books. I was kinda wrong. In the end, I've been making a podcast about stubbornness. I'm Jenny Skoog. This is the final episode of 4 Paths, 1 Impossible Dream. It's January 2026. 8 months have passed since I first sat down with Sarah, Kate, Kevin, and Katie Rose. In that time, Sarah has written half a book about Abraham Lincoln. Kate has published a book and already started researching the next one. Kevin has 3 chapters under review and a competitor in the race. And Katie Rose has a draft proposal, a list of agents, and 3 children under the age of 5. Here's where everybody stands. I want to start with Kate, because Kate is the only one of our 4 biographers who finished something this year. Her book came out. She promoted it. She lived through the silence of not knowing her sales numbers. And now, 6 months after publication, she's already deep in her next project. The next subject is a woman named Sarah Freeman Clark, a transcendentalist painter and writer. And Kate found her the way biographers often find their subjects, inside of somebody else's story.
And I know about her because the Emerson sisters went to stay with her in Newport. And when I peer review came back, someone was like, well, did Sarah Freeman Clark, she's so interesting, did she say anything about the sisters? And so I went and I was like, well, I can't go read through her whole archive. But yeah, I read around when they stayed with her. And I was like, her letters are really charming.
Charming letters. That's how it always begins. You pull one thread and suddenly there's a whole life attached to it. Kate applied for 2 research fellowships, one at the Houghton Library at Harvard and one at the Massachusetts Historical Society. Of course she got them both. And the first letter she read at the Houghton Library stopped her cold.
The first letter I read at the Houghton last summer, Sarah Freeman Clark is talking about how much fun she's having in Rome drawing with Harriet Hosmer every day, who was the subject of my first book. So it's like, oh, and then when I was at the Emerson House before one of the tours, I was telling them about this new project and they're like, you know, you're sitting underneath a sketch by Sarah Freeman Clark.
Her first subject, Harriet Hosmer, and her second subject, the Emerson sisters, connected through this woman she'd never written about. Kate had stumbled onto the link between her own 3 books.
I was like, oh, I just feel like it's meant to be. And as I'm reading through the letters, I'm just seeing these. I mean, it's the same circle of people. It's the same circle of people of Harriet Hosmer and the same circle of the Emersons, which were parallel, but didn't always exactly cross. Sarah Clark is the hinge between these 2 people, my 2 earlier books. In a way, I don't think I fully understood when I wrote the proposals. And it's actually a huge advantage to me. I feel like I'm not starting from scratch. Like, I'm like, I know who that person is. I understand some of these relationships. I'm learning more about them. So it's just been really fun. And it is a little daunting to think about actually writing something from scratch. Like, it's a long time since I've had that.
But Sarah Freeman Clark had a very different life from the Emerson sisters. She never married. And Kate had a guiding question.
And Sarah Freeman Clark, she doesn't get married. And so one thing I'm interested in thinking about is not only how she's expanding this transcendentalist conversations, but how she figures out how to shape what I think was a quite happy life as a single woman in a society in which that was not the norm. And a lot of that was about how did she build community in a way that allowed her to pursue her goals, both professional and personal.
How does a single woman build a happy life when the world tells her she shouldn't be single? That's a 19th century question that doesn't feel 19th century at all. And Kate found a moment in the archive that captured exactly the kind of woman Sarah Freeman Clark was. Emerson, the great philosopher of self-reliance, told Clark she shouldn't take art lessons. Just learn on your own. And Clark wrote to her brother.
I don't have the quote right in front of me, but it's basically like, well, of course he thinks that, but I need to make a living and I'm going to be able to be a professional painter faster if I take lessons. It's part of a, a lot of the feminist scholarship around transcendentalism is about how it wasn't just about self-reliance and how, particularly if you look at women's views, women's participation in it, they were much more about community and the way community was critical to developing yourself.
Self-reliance is great in theory, but Sarah Freeman Clark needed to eat. I'm already rooting for her. Kate isn't starting from scratch. She knows the circle, the archives, the community. But she's starting again, and that takes its own kind of courage. Kevin McGruder has been revising, three chapters sent to his agent, who's been giving him detailed feedback. The publisher who expressed interest wants to see polished work, work that proves an academic historian can tell a story a general reader can't put down. And Kevin knows the stakes. I told Kevin he just has to be the first one to get his book out.
Before we started recording, you mentioned the drama of biography. So
Oh,
I
yes,
was feeling
that is drama for sure.
that's some of it. So we'll
You
see.
just have to be the first one to
Yeah. That's my hope. That's my goal. So that's why I can't let these other projects pull me away.
Yeah, no, there's a sense of urgency now. That's great. That's it. No hedge, no qualification. After decades of thinking about Rudolf Fischer, Kevin's goal is simple: be first. He has things the competitor doesn't. He met Fischer's wife. He has the death certificate. He's traced the parents' history, the geography, the genealogy that nobody else has bothered with. And he understands Fischer in a way that goes beyond scholarship. Because Kevin lived the same double life, professional career by day, the Harlem Renaissance by night. But what struck me most about Kevin in January wasn't the competition or the research. It was the clarity. There was no agonizing, no existential doubt. Kevin knows who he's writing about and why it matters and what he brings to the table. The question isn't about whether the book will be good. The question is about whether he can get it into the world before someone else does. 40 years is a long time to carry a story. Kevin is ready to put it down on paper and let other people carry it too. In April 2025, Katie Rosequant told me she wasn't a biographer because she hadn't published a biography. In January 2026, I asked her, "Do you still feel that way?"
I mean, like, in a sense, but I think maybe I feel a little bit more confident now.
A little bit more, maybe. But then she said something that told me more than any confident declaration could have.
I do feel like I'm closer to that idea than I was then. I definitely don't think that feels realistic, but I think maybe having an agent could be, or at least having some interest and kind of figuring out a little bit. Having it feel a little bit less hypothetical and more like I'm actually putting this out into the world and trying to connect with people who can help me make this book real. I think that I will definitely be there by April. And this is an idea I've literally been ruminating on for many years. So even just getting to that point will feel like I'm actually taking the real steps to make this real.
Less hypothetical, that's the shift. In April, the book was an idea Katie Rose was working on in the margins of pregnancy and journalism and parenting. In January, it's a proposal that's been workshopped, a list of agents she's assembled, a set of fellowship applications she's submitted. But it hasn't been easy to get here. Katie Rose went back to work as a journalist after her leave, and the juggling act just got harder.
It definitely has been a little bit of a busy season for me, and it's been tough to balance, not just to balance working on this book with having three small children, which is obviously part of it, but I also am a working journalist, and so I feel like I was on this leave and then I went back to work and it was sort of the Christmas break, and now I'm, getting back to it, and there's just a lot of different things that are kind of all calling for my attention. I have obligations to, journalism outlets that I work with. I was actually really fortunate to get a pretty exciting fellowship for this year for reporting, for some investigative reporting, which is great and amazing. And I'm really excited, but I'm just trying to figure out how exactly to balance these different pieces of my career, especially when my workday is a little bit tightened in on the front end and the back end with getting kids ready, picking kids up, makes it even a little bit more tight on my time. So it's an exciting moment in my career, but I want to make sure that this book doesn't become the thing that gets last priority, because at this point I don't have a deadline, only self-imposed. So yeah, writing while living is always challenging.
Three kids, a journalism career, a book proposal that still needs a major edit before it goes to agents, and Katie Rose's response to all of it.
So I actually do have a draft proposal. I have not sent it out. I still need to kind of do a major edit, maybe overhaul, but I got through all the different pieces of it that I had been trying to get through, because there's a lot of required sections of it.
She got through all the pieces. That sentence doesn't sound like much, but if you've been following Katie Rose since April, and then in July when she was a week from her due date, still sitting at her desk telling me she was figuring it out as she goes, "I got through all the pieces" is a triumph. No agent yet, no deal, no guarantee, but a draft proposal, a plan, and a refusal to quit. That's progress. I saved Sarah for last because Sarah gave me the ending. When I asked her if she had a final message for our listeners, anyone out there who's thinking about writing a book or writing a biography or doing any kind of creative work that scares them, Sarah didn't hesitate. And what she said was so good, I'm going to let it play long.
I would say that if you are listening and thinking, who is this weirdo? I could write a better book than her. Go write that book, because you might be right, honestly. And if you're listening to these stories that you've heard through this podcast and you're thinking, oh, that sounds like so much work, I could never do that, you're wrong. You could. Should you? I don't know.
Should you? I don't know. Only Sarah Benincasa could put it that way.
I think that a lot of people want to write and think, for different reasons, that they're not good enough or that they shouldn't. And I would say you should, but do it in your own way, because your pattern, your writing, it's not going to look like mine or another author's. It's going to be yours. That's part of the magic of it. You're going to invent your own way. I would say I really appreciate that people would care enough about the art and craft of biography to listen to these stories. I think it's really important. It's really special. And however well I do at it, some of the people I admire the most are always going to be biographers, because it's like through listening to or reading these stories that I've found a place to figure out who I am in this world. And I think it's just an absolutely wonderful genre and so, so important.
You're going to invent your own way. Sarah is inventing hers. 5:30 in the morning, candle lit on a $40 desk, writing about a man who's been dead for 161 years and who still somehow feels alive in her hands. Half the manuscript due in April, the full book due August 1st. She told me in June that she sees herself as an explorer, not an expert, that she wants the reader to feel like they're at a party, hearing a really interesting acquaintance tell a story that makes them want to learn more.
Like, I want them to feel like they're hearing a friend or just a really interesting acquaintance at a party tell them a story that makes them want to go out and learn more themselves.
An interesting acquaintance at a party. That's Sarah's LinkedIn book. And honestly, that's what this podcast has been too. Four interesting people telling me their stories, trusting me to pass them along to you. So, who gets to write biography? 8 months ago, I thought I knew the answer. Scholars, historians, people with PhDs, and archival fellowships and university press contracts. I was pretty wrong about that too. A comedian gets to write biography. She can sit in her office with 40 Lincoln books and a candle and a foldable desk and write about Abraham Lincoln's childhood. And she can do it with humor and honesty and a refusal to make him into either a saint or a villain. A professor gets to write biography. She can spend years recovering the lives of two women that history forgot, then march through Concord carrying a sign with their names on it, and then, before the sales numbers even come in, start the whole process over with someone new. A historian gets to write biography. He gets to think about a man for 40 years, trace his parents through census records and archives, hold his death certificate, and still wake up every day knowing he has to write it better and faster than anyone else. And a journalist gets to write biography. She can do it while pregnant, while chasing a toddler and a four-year-old, while filing stories for national publications, while paying $25 a month for a website that tells her which agents might be interested in a book about five women who built the American administrative state 100 years ago. Who gets to write biography? Anyone stubborn enough to keep going. They are all still writing. Sarah in Chicago, Kate in New York, Kevin in Ohio, and Katie Rose in New York. Four paths, one impossible dream. And it's not impossible at all. Four Paths, One Impossible Dream has been a production of BioPodcast and Biographers International Organization. Ellie and Marie Fillengaines created our theme music. Carolyn Van Putten is our assistant producer. Cherie Newman is our engineer, and Sonia Williams is our executive producer. I'm Jenny Skoog. Thank you to Sarah Benincasa, Kate Culkin, Kevin McRuder, and Katie Rose Quant for 8 months of honesty, generosity, and trust. It's been the privilege of my career to tell your stories. To learn more about Bio or to hear other episodes in our podcast series, please visit our website, biographersinternational.org.